The Siegel Music Colony in Scroon Lake is presenting the world premiere production of a new opera by composer Evan Mack, librettist Joshua McGuire, based on the novel Roscoe by Pulitzer Prize-winning author William Kennedy. With music that draws from many popular 20th century styles, the story follows the character Roscoe Conway, a kingpin in the mid-1940s Albany political machine, as he navigates his way through a multitude of political and personal challenges, both past and present. Performances take place from August 3rd through the 6th. To tell us more, we welcome composer Evan Mack, librettist Joshua McGuire, Siegel Music Colony Artistic Director Darren Woods, and of course, Pulitzer Prize-winning author William Kennedy. It is a delight to have all of you this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks.
A great pleasure. So let us begin with you, Darren, of how this whole project came about.
Well, I've been following Evan for a couple of years, and there was a workshop of Roscoe that was done just up the road at Opera Saratoga a couple of years ago, and he invited me to watch it via live stream, and I was in Fort Worth at my kitchen table, and I thought, wow, this is really, really terrific. And I invited him to come up and visit with me at Siegel, and we looked over his notes for the second act, and I said, you know, I think we'd like to start our 101st season by presenting the world premiere of Roscoe. So it's been a nice sort of dance the last year and a half getting this all together, and it's finally coming to pass on the 3rd.
So Evan, give us a sense of how this all came about.
It started with reading the novel, and after reading it, I called Josh right away, and I said, I think we have our new opera, and as the characters are really just larger than life, and it's such a great story to tell, and especially capturing it through music. As the piece has grown, you know, we wrote Act One and workshopped it, and then we were accepted at Yaddo, and so Josh and I spent 2 weeks at the Great Art Colony and wrote all of Act Two in 2 weeks, and so it put things sort of in a warp drive, and then running into Darren and sort of going over his notes and his thoughts on how it functions in opera and implementing those things, it's been just a wonderful experience. So to be sitting in the rehearsals now, this is kind of like dessert. You know, I'm really just enjoying myself watching the rehearsals going, wow, this is really coming to life.
So, Josh, give us a sense of the process that both you and Evan had in bringing the story to life.
Well, I think the first word that comes to mind would be the most luxurious process imaginable for, you know, putting an opera together. But simply because when you enter one of Bill's novels, it's a world where the characters are so finely drawn that when you have to inevitably cut the thing up and hammer it out into a straight line and put it into another genre entirely, it's an inherently violent process, you know, and so the characters survive. they make it into the opera. And then being able to work so closely with Bill, the fact that he was willing to look over the libretto, the fact that he was willing to sit and listen to the music and do that work with us, just really, really brought it to life in a way that we couldn't have done on our own, because we were able to say, okay, well, we need a character who doesn't say this in the novel to say that, and to actually help us make those characters talk in a way that was authentic, not only to the novel, but to the history behind the novel. The piece just has a kind of ineffable, like, deep game to it when you listen to it because of that, because he was right here beside us in the process. It was fantastic.
Bill, what do you think of, were there thoughts at any point of an operatic sense to the work and to the novel Roscoe?
Only after Evan called me and said, I want to make an opera out of it, and then I realized how operatic it was. It was a perfect novel for an opera. And Evan said that Roscoe Conway is a larger-than-life character, and there's several of those in the book, but there have been several of those in my life and my contacts with the political machine, and that's what this is all about, the Albany political machine, which took power in 1921 and hasn't let go of it since. And, of course, the machine has transformed, but it's still the Democratic power, Democratic Party that runs the city and the county. And that's what this book was telling the story of, how the longevity of it, how they did it, and it was great for me. Now I'm thinking of reducing it to operatic lyrics, and I don't know what's going to happen, but I have great faith that the music and the talent of the singers is going to tell the story in a way that has never been told before.
Now, you've had forays into theater with your work before.
That's true. I've had a couple of plays. I have one in process right now. I had a play that I wrote way back in the 90s called Grand View that appeared on stage in Capitol Repertory Theater in Albany, and that was quite a successful event. And I have another play that I, The Light on Colony Street, and wherever, if you like another title, The Light of the World. I haven't decided yet. But that's a play in process. And as of yesterday, I finished writing the first draft of a play that is being taken from Ironweed. So I have a collaborator on that. She is a woman that's been in theater for a number of years and very smart lady and an actress and director. And she knows a lot about transforming literary projects into theatrical projects. And so we're looking forward to taking it into New York in the very near future.
Evan, we heard from Josh talk about the process of working with Bill, and I'm hoping you expand a little bit on that of making sure to be true to the story, to be true to obviously what is happening within Roscoe.
What was interesting, you know, you have to contend with opera is that, you know, ultimately in the end, music carries the narrative or shares the weight. And so by definition, then some of the text has to either be boiled down or streamlined or cut. And otherwise, the opera would be 4 days long. And so I think what was very nice was we would write a couple scenes, and I would, you know, Josh and I have this process of going back and forth. Sometimes it's music, sometimes it's words, and kind of having this combustible material blow up and see what happens. And then every couple scenes, we would, I'd meet with Bill, and we'd go over the libretto, and then kind of really at the word level and then the big picture level, and then I'd play him the aria and poorly sing to him from my computer and to give him a rough idea of how it would go. And then it was nice because then other singers were sort of taking an aria here or there, and I would get these little recordings, and the Siegel singers were taking some of these stand and plant numbers, and instantly they transformed because now you have the word and music firing at one level, and then you have a singer sort of giving his or her interpretation of that, and it gives it an entirely new dimension. And so the piece really organically grew out of that, but always really having, you know, Bill with his finger on the pulse to make sure we were being as true as possible to his words.
What were some of the things that you were interested in or concerned about?
It was very difficult for me to do this because I have no idea about how to write a libretto and how to match the words with the music. I have written a song or two in my life, but this is totally different. And so I quickly abdicated from trying to do that at all. And what I would do is try to be true to the language of the book, and if it was any deviation from it that I saw that I felt was either, you know, anachronistic or just out of sync with Roscoe's vernacular, then I would offer some change or offer some rewrites, and I would like sum up the scene and offer alternative lines, not necessarily to be used, but to be kind of source material for Josh to refine the ideas into whatever lyric was necessary to match with Evan's music. I brought back some of the jokes that got lost in the shuffle. Roscoe is a funny book, and it's going to be a funny opera, I think, in a lot of ways. But it's high opera in a sense that there are some very tragic moments, and there's some grand romance, and some evil doings, and
the singers are embracing it like crazy, the characters. It's really fun to watch them work with a living composer, be creating roles that they can't go to YouTube and watch a famous singer sing it, and really read the book, do the research, and then just completely delve so completely into these incredible characters.
Yes, Evan referred to the Siegel Singers. So tell us, who makes up the Siegel Singers?
The Siegel Singers, Tony Kostecki, our general director, and I do about a 7-city audition tour in the winter, and we hear between 700 and 900 singers, and we take 32 of the most talented singers in the United States. Most of them are still in college graduate students, and they're the best from around the country. And we assign the roles right after we hear them, and they come here prepared to do 5 different productions, of which this is the 4th production of the season.
The world premiere of Roscoe runs August 3rd through the 6th at the Siegel Music Colony in Scroon Lake, and you can find out more by going to siegelcolony.org. Evan Mack is the composer, librettist Josh McGuire, William Kennedy, the author of the novel Roscoe, and Darren Woods, the artistic director of the Siegel Music Colony, all join us this morning. Evan, when you start a project like this, give us an idea of the time frame, because I know this has been something that has long been in the works.
You know, the average new opera takes about 8 to 10 years to go from page to stage, and I have been extremely lucky that we really kind of broke ground in 2013, and now we're going to have a world premiere 3 years later. I mean, that's really putting things in hyperdrive, and so. But it's a long commitment. You know, I sort of, when I start an opera, Josh and I will bat things back and forth. And I really eat, sleep, and breathe that opera as it's in creation. And then revision and revision and revision. And it's, you know, sometimes I chase the muse, and sometimes the muse is right there waiting for me. And so the product, you know, in the end is, especially with Roscoe, has gone through so many filters with working with Josh, working with Bill, having a workshop. We had a workshop at Siegel last year for an entire week and transformed Act 1 and streamlined Act 2. And so it was really, again, another remarkable moment hearing the first musical sing through a couple weeks ago. Where everyone's on book and just singing the entire opera start to finish. And you hear 32 singers completely bought into the piece, knowing every single note forwards and backwards, singing. It was one of those landmarks in your career that I just will never forget.
Josh, give us a sense. You know, we talked to a lot of playwrights on the program, and they talk about how they can sit in the back of the theater and watch the actors on stage and make notes and change things. Do you have that luxury as much?
At this point, I don't give it to myself. I could revise more or less endlessly, but there has to be a point for me. I know when you feel the screw bite in the wood. That is, there's no errors. Okay, there's a kind of sense of critical mass that I'm not going to revise anymore. And for me, I'd have to say a part of the answer to that question is seeing the character given back to me by the actor. I'm not entirely sure. Ever. I'm not 100% sure who a character is until I see a singer give it back to me and make it their own. And in fact, I'm of the opinion that the character is the singer in the moment. I believe that, I think some people have the idea that opera is a dramatic form with musical accompaniment, and I believe it's a musical form with dramatic accompaniment. It's people, you know, you go for that moment of theater when the music delivers it, and when the singer delivers it and creates that that magic in the theater, and it really we spend years and years and years writing it, revising it, and it actually only exists for a couple of hours,
right?
You know, in reality, the way I see it. And so, no, I don't tamper with that. I'm very hands off with that. Once Evan's comfortable, in this case, when Bill was comfortable, and I'm comfortable, then I'm going to allow what happens to happen in that theater.
This is either a really good question or a naive question, and I prefer you not tell me which one. But let me just ask it, which is, so when you're watching it, and maybe it doesn't completely ring true, are you able to differentiate between whether it is the performance by that particular singer or the characterization that has been developed?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's not a naive question. It's actually a really good one, because I think in earlier parts of the process, in the workshop process, I don't know. And it's a great anxiety of like, is this not working because the pacing is off in their performance, or is this not working because I'm not giving them enough to work with? Mm. At this point, as Evan kind of alluded to, all the filters it's been through, no, I think that it really is, it's workable. And part of that is sitting with the score and hearing it and knowing it and seeing it in more than one performance. I know for me is a huge part of that, yeah. Seeing different singers perform the same aria, you know.
Yeah, and the wonderful thing that, you know, Josh is also a highly trained musician. So his words and the flow of everything really lend itself to be set to music. It's actually not boxed in. So his treatment of Bill's words, I mean, it rings Kennedy throughout the entire opera. And then there's sort of transitional material or the turn of phrase in which it's treated that when the music does the lifting, again, it fires. And so I think that's the benefit of the way Josh writes as well, with a musician's ear and a writer's eye.
Well, and likewise, Evan grew up in the theater and has an incredible, I mean, absolutely just does not ever fault, you know, sense of theatrical timing. There's mm-hmm. just absolutely no. So that's the kind of mutual trust we have when we're working, where it's like, okay, this needs to move on now. I always take his word for that and always get the text out of the way, because nothing can jam up an opera like too much text. You know, it can really kill it. And he creates a world, a kind of a vacuum, where by the end of the opera, you know, you can have a single line melody doing a motive and you see, oh, that's that character thinking about, that's the character remembering X or Y. Mm. And so it really, by that point, the kind of alchemy occurs where the music can actually convey information that text normally would.
And to Bill's point, you could keep to the jokes. You could keep the
jokes. Exactly.
Yeah. No, it does. Yeah.
You don't want to miss those. In Josh saying this about the pointing to what you had mentioned earlier, Evan, about the filters, and you had said that, look, this is something that can sometimes be an 8 to 10 year process. Why does it take that long?
I can speak a little bit, and Darren is one of the champions of new operas in this country, and so he could probably dive in further. But I just know that I think part people work a little slower than I do. I don't know about that. No, I'm just kidding. But I think it, you know, because sometimes everything can get bottlenecked. It can get bottlenecked at the level of the word, or a scene cannot work, and so what you thought was a load-bearing scene actually doesn't function in the full arc of the opera. And then if that happens, you're talking months and months of rewrites or reconfiguring an opera, and that takes a long time. I think what really sped this up was the two magical hills in the in upstate New York was Yaddo, giving us 2 weeks, which, you know, 1 hour at Yaddo time is a week for a normal human being. And then the 1 week at Siegel, where we had 7 days, it was complete trust, with the cast that was provided by Siegel, with the, ears of Darren Woods and Richard Kagu, who is the stage director, and Tony Kotzecki, and, you know, with that complete trust with the singers, that piece then again transformed and at an accelerated pace, because we had 7 days of living and eating and breathing that opera.
I think a big reason that new opera and American opera has had such an incredible growth in the last 10 years is that we are taking time to really workshop them and spend time with them. Time was where a composer wrote something, you put it on and you went, oh darn, that just missed, or that just... If only this had happened. And so, you know, Puccini had 10 theaters lined up when he did an opera. And so he got time. Those were his workshops, the presentations at different theaters. We don't have that luxury anymore. So having these times to look at it and shape it and again, you can mold anything and beat it to death. And you don't want to do that. You want to let the creators do it. And it's been interesting to your question of Josh, that even as much as they know this piece, watching them watch the staging and watch the artists and have them be surprised at some of the things that they wrote. And Evan would say that just hit me for the first time that way. And that's wonderful when your own work can surprise you that way.
And Bill, obviously you've had a lot of input and you've been working on this with Evan and Josh throughout the process over the last couple of years. So when you see it on August 3rd, will you be able to just sit back and enjoy it and be somewhat removed from it in the sense
I'll be discovering it, really, I think, for the first time. I've seen it in pieces. I've seen a run through in Saratoga, and I've seen parts of the opera in performed, and I've read it 5 or 10 times. I'm not sure how many, 20. But I really don't know what the ultimate effect is going to be. I'm really looking forward to it. I've loved so much of the music, and I think that the drama is developed in a very unusual way, and it's a very dynamic staging that Evan and Josh have figured out, and I'd be really looking forward to what's going to happen up in Screwin' Lake.
While thrilling, Evan, it has to be a little unnerving to have Bill there on opening night, right?
Yeah, of course. I always want to make sure that Bill is happy, and that was I think part of the rider when we first came up with the development deal. I think the honor in the end was sort of Bill trusting me and us to really take it and say, well, this is the language I know how to best tell your story through the music. And I've been, by always sort of checking in with him and showing things, I think it's going to, Bill will be pleasantly surprised as he sits back on August 3rd. What's nice is even at Siegel, there will be two pianos and drums. Mm. And so when you have the jazzier elements, you're going to get that feel with the drum set. And it puts the entire musical score in Technicolor as opposed to black and white, where if it was just piano. And so even just the musical notes are jumping off the page at a much more exciting rate.
And Darren, I'll end with this, because if people don't know, Siegel is such a beautiful, intimate space to see an opera like
this.
Right.
It's 175 seats. There's not a bad seat in the house. And for our Albany friends, we have a matinee on Friday, so you can drive to get there at 2 o'clock. And the show is only 2 hours and 15 minutes long with the intermission, and so you can be home in time for dinner. It's a really beautiful, intimate setting. And there we'll be doing, the three of us, Josh and Evan and I, will be doing a pre-show lecture an hour before the show. So if you want to have a Q&A with the creators, we'll be hosting that an hour before each performance.
The world premiere of Roscoe runs August 3rd through the 6th. It's August 3rd, 4th, and 6th at 8 o'clock. And as Darren mentioned, August 5th at 2 p.m. All at the Siegel Music Colony in Screwin' Lake. You can find out more information by going to their website, siegelcolony.org, siegelcolony.org. Evan Mack, Josh McGuire, Darren Woods, and William Kennedy, a great pleasure to have you all here this morning. Best of luck, and have a beautiful opening. Thank you very much for being
with
us.
Thank you.
See you later,
Joe.
Thank you. Again, you can find out more information about the world premiere of Roscoe playing August 3rd through the 6th at the Siegel Music Colony in Screwin' Lake by going to siegelcolony.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.